Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with David Winogrand, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Information, Management, and Technology, and Deputy CIO. Also joining us in our conversation is Linda Marshall, partner in IBM's Defense Industry Practice. David, DoD is transforming from platform-centric to network-centric operations, and the CIO is providing key leadership to meet this net-centric vision. Could you elaborate on DoD's net-centric vision? What are the goals of net-centric operations that are driving this transformation, and how does the recent acquisition of net-centric enterprise services fit into this overall construct?
Sure, absolutely. Net-centric operations, or net-centricity, is the buzzword du jour for the Department of Defense. And sometimes I think for people it can sound a little bit jargony. So I'm a relatively simple-minded guy. So I like to tell the story about Tinker Toys and plasma balls because I think it gets to the heart of the matter. In the old days, people developed point-to-point solutions, communication systems and networks. And it was much like building with Tinker Toys. And I'd build one and then I'd have to connect to you. And then Linda would have one and I'd connect to her. And you can begin to see that as you grow and grow in terms of nodes on the network, the interconnections become unwieldy. And so much like a Tinker Toy tower that's been built too tall, it begins to crumble. The idea of net centricity is much more like the plasma balls that we've all seen, where energy, or in this case, knowledge, is in the center of the plasma ball. And wherever I touch the outside of the globe, the energy gets to me. So no matter where I am in the organization, I can plug into the global information grid, which is basically our network and data structure, and get the knowledge that I need. It's really all about the flow of knowledge and enhancing the flow of knowledge across the organization. There was a Gartner statistic from a few years ago about how in any large organization, public or private, about 70% of the knowledge of that organization lived on people's hard drives, which of course meant it wasn't really actually knowledge that you can share. So this net-centric idea is really all about the flow of data, the sharing of knowledge. And once again, you know, knowledge management being a relatively new discipline, it begins to take on this academic aura of tacit knowledge capture and a lot of other jargons. And so, you know, we can actually simplify that too if you want, because I'm a firm believer in the John Wayne School of Knowledge Management. It's a great movie clip where John Wayne's a Marine sergeant. He's talking to the young Marine and he says, "Son, life is tough. It's tougher if you're stupid." And if you think about it, that's what knowledge management is all about. It's about the power that happens when people that work together learn together. It's what happens in the wardroom or in the chief's mess on a ship when people who deploy together train together. That together we can be much smarter, much more agile, much more creative than we might be individually. And so net centricity is really about making that happen. So it's not the sexiest thing around, but it really is all about the data. Making data visible. Because right? The three problems I often face is I can't find it, and if I can find it, I can't access it, and if I can access it, I can't understand it. So working on those three sets of things are sort of crucial. And you mentioned net-centric enterprise services, which is a series of core enterprise services. If you move to a net-centric world, there are some things that need to be provided by the corporation or the enterprise for the benefit of everybody, and that's what the NCES program is all about. There's no need for people to buy separate collaboration tools. Federated search and discovery. We can have global directory services. We can have an enterprise portal. And so all these things that will be provided by the enterprise for the rest of the organization are what comprise the NCES program.
Now, this is likely related, but you've been quoted as saying that the world is not about separate networks. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by this statement?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit more philosophical than practical because it clearly does involve different networks now. But I think it is that idea about what does the word enterprise mean to you? Because different components of the Department of Defense are very big. In my Navy life, the Naval Sea Systems Command is a $30 billion a year organization. If I yanked them out of the Navy and put them in the Fortune 100, they'd be way up the list. But if they're only building things that work for the Naval Sea Systems Command and the people that buy and maintain ships, they're missing the point because the Naval Air Systems Command buys and maintains airplanes and they're part of a broader Navy Marine Corps team. They're part of a broader DoD team. They're part of a team with our allies and coalition partners and on the list goes. And so you have to have your mind firmly focused on you may be part of an individual organization, but you better be buying and building for the broader team. As a classic example, an aircraft carrier leaves San Diego on its way to the Persian Gulf. It's got equipment and training to go do the job of being part of a carrier strike group. But halfway through the journey, they're diverted to do humanitarian relief because of a tsunami. completely different partners, non-governmental organizations, different types of collaboration tools, what we would call the unanticipated users. If you're not thinking about how to be connected to the rest of the world, you won't be able to be part of the network solution.
What is the Department of Defense's data and information strategy for delivering timely, relevant, critical information to the warfighter in this new digital era? And how does this strategy seek to make data identifiable, accessible, and understandable throughout the entire enterprise?
It's a really exciting thing that's going on. We have a lot of folks that are working on this. Mike Krieger is one of my directors, and he's just been a true champion for change in this space. We have a net-centric data strategy, and then the corresponding directives and guides that tell you how to do it. And it focuses on what we were just talking about if you can make data visible, accessible, and understandable, then you can share knowledge quickly. And the way that it gets manifested is in what we call communities of interest, or COIs. Communities of interest are formed when people from different organizations that have a common problem or common issue get together to create a solution. There are lots of great examples of COIs. The one I thought I'd talk with you about for a moment is maritime domain awareness. So what kind of commercial vessels are out at sea? What are their crews? What are their cargoes? Interestingly, that kind of knowledge exists in databases that, of course, in the old days were stovepiped and owned by different organizations. So a community of interest forms. It involves the Navy, the intelligence community, the Coast Guard, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Transportation. And in a matter of months and a few hundred thousand dollars, instead of what we would have done in the past when we had a penchant for saying, I've got existing legacy systems, they're not quite fitting the bill, so let's go buy the multi-gazillion dollar new system that takes years to deploy. Right? So instead of doing that, they got together, they found the data, they used the commercial state-of-the-art technologies like XML to make the data available to be served up, and in a few short months, everybody's able to see this information. So whether you're the captain of the Coast Guard cutter or the Navy vessel, you're able to see the information that you need on the commercial vessels. It's fabulous, and it happens really fast. And there's lots of these COIs going on. There are COIs about blue force tracking, keeping track on the battlefield of all the people that are on your team, strike missions, which are all about planning targeting, but use the basic issues of what, when, and where that are equally applicable whether or not you're planning a Tomahawk mission strike or you're trying to do disaster relief at FEMA. And the list goes on and on and on. And it's a wonderful thing because it brings together people quickly, find a solution, and deliver results in a few short months. I'm just so excited about it because it's changing the way we do business. It's much like the model of weather. Everybody contributes local weather data because they'd like to know what weather's like in the rest of the world. So everybody publishes or serves up the stuff that they have for the benefit of being able to use the information that the others have too.
So it's really about a collaboration. That's sort of the key component to all this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does – you know, we focus on the technical side of it at this point, but there are other aspects to it too, right? And so the technology exists to make data strategies happen. But there are other parts of it too because, of course, there are process changes and policy changes and educational opportunities. So hand in hand with our net-centric data strategy, we have an information sharing strategy, and now we're working on the corresponding implementation plan that actually lays out the other kinds of changes that need to take place in order to break down the impediments to sharing of the past.
So, Dave, what role does service-oriented architecture play in making your data strategy as well as your overall net-centric vision a reality?
Yeah, SOA is at the heart of the matter. There's a fascinating philosophical change that's going on right now. For years, we've had this systems view of the world. It's the way programs are designed. It's the way architectures are built. But the world really is now all about services. And this idea that, you know, you could develop a service and serve it up. I could do it as a self-service transaction. I could be standing waiting for the bus, go to the enterprise portal from my little wireless device and do a transaction because it's service-oriented rather than standalone monolithic systems of the past. And so the document that we'll be publishing is called our Net-Centric Services Strategy, and it's the companion document to the data strategy that tells how SOA will be used to make this vision a reality.
David, how do you balance the need to procure best-of-breed technology with the security of DoD's information technology infrastructure? So, for example, how do you deal with the reality that almost all commercial off-the-shelf software has at least some components of it that were developed in other countries?
Yes. I would say that the top two issues for me are information sharing on the one hand and information security on the other. And the challenge that we have is people often refer to them as a balancing act. How do you balance information sharing and information security, which is not the analogy that I like because I think it pits one against the other. And it implies that advances in information security come at the expense of the ability to share, which are, of course, the simplest kinds of information security solutions. And so what it ends up happening is the information security professional is viewed as the knucklehead that just wants to shut down access. The information sharing zealot is viewed as the crazy person that doesn't understand that it's a dangerous world out there and they shouldn't just be opening the door. And so it really has to be something that we focus on together. And so using a nautical analogy, right, about the high tide rises all boats, you know, we need to be extremely successful at both information sharing and information security. And if you think about it that way, then you will choose for a different set of information security solutions because the easy information security solutions are always about isolation. Right? The more I wall myself away, the less bad things can get in, but of course, the less collaboration can go out. And so this idea about we must be extremely successful about sharing and security is what's driving the set of security solutions and secure collaboration solutions that we're looking at now. It is a challenging time. Globalization happened, right? And things are built around the world. And so it is really important that people understand what they're buying and what they're using it for and the pedigrees and the security of the different solutions. And one size never fits all. What's important for speed in an unclassified environment might be different than what's needed in a highly classified environment. So software assurance, what's made where, and the pedigree of it and the security of it are all things that people need to take in consideration. But there is a continuum about using this kind of technology for this sort of answer, different kind of technology for a more secure solution.
So let me expand on this theme, if you will. You've called for innovative partnerships with industry. Could you elaborate on what kinds of partnerships you are currently developing to improve operations or outcomes? And in what areas would you like to enhance or expand this public-private collaboration?
Yeah, absolutely. Gone are the days where people can go their own way. The government shouldn't be in the business of building their own stuff. There are wonderful commercial solutions that are out there, and government needs to leverage those. Gone also have to be the days where the government person built this really detailed spec and threw it over the transom and expected a vendor to just deliver on it. It would seem to me in this information world, it is the height of arrogance to imagine that you as the government person trying to get a solution know all the answers. And so what I'm a big fan of is performance-based contracting and managed services and this idea that my relationship with industry ought to be one about a strategic partnership where I talk about the results that I need to obtain. And I talk about the service levels that I expect, and perhaps I have some kind of fixed price contract vehicle with incentive payments so that if you can exceed my expectations, you'll be rewarded for your innovation and performance. And then all of the great minds at your company are able to be brought to bear. In my Navy life, when we did the Navy Marine Corps intranet, which was a large seat management contract but was done as a performance-based contract, we didn't tell the winning contractor that he had to buy Dell computers and use Windows 2000. We told him about latency and refresh rates and security and customer satisfaction, and then gave the company the freedom to pick the right products to deliver for our behalf. And that's the future. You can't do this alone, and you need to leverage the fact that industry has this huge set of great brains that can help you find the path to the future together.
Great. What about the DoD's IT innovation? We will ask David Wennergren, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Information Management and Technology and Deputy CIO, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.